I want to welcome everyone to the Fourth Circuit this morning. We're looking forward to hearing your cases. Judge Duncan and I are particularly thrilled to be with Judge Childs and welcome her to the Fourth Circuit today. Our first case, number 10-2211, Agoraro, I may have mispronounced that, versus the MOL Ship Management Company, et al. Mr. Hoffman. Pleased to hear from you, Mr. Hoffman.
Judges King, Duncan, and Childs, Mr. Whitman. I represent Mr. Potenciano Agoraro, who is a Filipino seaman devastatingly injured in August of 2008 while serving on a cargo ship owned by a Liberian corporation with its headquarters in Liberia, being operated by that corporation along with his employer, which is a Japanese corporation, on a time charter to another Japanese corporation to be assigned to this ship as a seaman. He did sign an employment agreement in the Philippines with MOL, which is the MOL Ship Management Company, which I'll refer to as MOL from here on. The 5 points I will be discussing today are that, first, there was no, contrary to what Judge Blake found in the district court below, there was no agreement to arbitrate any of his claims because there was a superseding agreement with a union that and the ship owner and the employer.
Your argument in that regard is not that there was any specific provision in the June 3rd agreement that superseded the June 2nd agreement.
Exactly.
But that it subsumed it? Is that the thrust of your argument? I mean, I think you would agree that there's no specific language in this June 3rd agreement that supersedes the June 2nd one.
There's no language that says this agreement supersedes.
Right.
Correct. I think
right.
That it is simply by looking through the totality of the agreements, and in particular, I was counting the pages last night that are, of course, in the record. The IBF, the joint agreement IBF-CBA, which is with the Japanese JSU, it's a long name, consists of 22 different pages, 40 or 45 different topics in the paragraphs. The POEA regulations consist of fewer pages and fewer issues. The POEA agreement itself, the agreement that Mr. Agoraro signed, does not talk about arbitration. It just references the POEA regulations. And in particular, in those regulations is Article 29, which says there will be arbitration.
But and that's the one that Judge Blake said applied here.
That's absolutely correct. That's right. But the POEA regulations themselves say that the regulations are a floor. They are a minimum. The agreement itself says that the regulations, that the rights of the seamen can be improved by contract.
I'm sorry, just for my sake,
yes.
When you say agreement, would you just say June 3rd or June 2nd? It would just make it easier for me to understand.
Okay. Which one
I will,
and I will. Thank
that would
you.
Be
and
helpful. Thank
that,
you.
That will be. The June 2nd agreement does allow and does say that the rights of the seamen can be improved so long as they are approved by the POEA. The June 3rd agreement is submitted to the POEA and is approved. So therefore, if the June 3rd agreement incorporates more rights, then that is under the Philippine law and under the contract law, that does supersede and does permit better rights to the seamen. What we have here.
I have to just briefly question your use of the term supersedes, because as I read the June 2nd agreement, it not only specifically contemplated that mandatory arbitration claims could arise out of a collective bargaining agreement, as you say, but it also very specifically says that future agreements, like the June 2nd agreement, are to be read harmoniously with it. Not to, that's why I took issue with your use of the term supersedes, because it appears, to me at least, that the June 2nd agreement contemplates and even invites other provisions that are to be read in conjunction with it.
Judge Duncan, I appreciate your position, and I struggled in my brief in how to analyze it as well. From the case law that I've seen and I cite, a superseding agreement can be determined by the court based on the totality of the reading of the contracts, or it could be considered to be a supplement. And I think it's arguing over words that are not that important in this case, because if it supplements or supersedes, the point is in the provisions of the June 3rd agreement in section 28.1 through 6, which talks about a seaman's injury remedies. It does admit of the right to have an action at law, which is completely contradictory to what the section 29 of the June of the POE regulations, which are incorporated in the June 2nd agreement. So that's the point I wish to make, that yes, I may be, it may be just mincing words, or it may have some significance, but I believe that it's either superseding or supplementary, that and takes the place of in the June 3rd agreement, taking the place of the provisions of section 29 of the POE regulations.
But supersede and supplementary would have two different meanings.
But what I'm saying is, you could read it as being the agreement being supplementary to the June 2nd agreement, but that provision itself supersedes.
Well, the later June 3rd agreement does not have an arbitration provision, correct?
That is correct, and it does. And as I pointed out in section 28.5, it says, this will not be in derogation of an act. The way I read it is, it's not in derogation of an action at law, but there would be a set off for the provisions of the that are within the June 3rd agreement for the benefits that would be payable. So that both are payable.
But in supplementing, if you use your term, the June 3rd agreement supplementing the June 2nd agreement, there's nothing in here that takes away from the original agreement, though. So if there's an arbitration provision in the original June 2nd agreement, how can you just explain away that provision if the second agreement doesn't speak to it?
Because the second agreement talks about seaman's remedies in an injury situation and says what the rights are. So that's, and it does say that you have an action at law. So therefore, yes, you're right. You have this tension where they are inconsistent, and then under contract law, you would look to the later agreement, which was the June 3rd agreement, which was approved by the POEA.
Could you perhaps, though, and I'm sorry to belabor this, but could you perhaps then address the specific provision of the June 2nd agreement providing that future agreements should be read harmoniously rather than in conflict if they can? It appears to me that they can, or at least it is arguable that they can be read harmoniously, that they all stand together.
Well, I think that, and they just can't. I just can't see how, if you say that you have an action at law, you have to arbitrate it. That is, to me, totally inconsistent. And that's why I'm saying that the 28.1 through 6 provisions of the June 3rd agreement supersede that issue of the arbitration agreement. Now, the arbitration agreement is also part of, in the POE regulations, is also part of a benefit schema that provides essentially workers' comp benefits for various injuries. And there's literally 10 pages of what you would get if you have a finger injury or this, that, or the other thing. It does not say anything about having an action at law. That's why the June 3rd agreement, again approved by the BOEA, does discuss having the right to an action at law. So therefore, it does supplement to that extent.
Your so it would be a novation?
That's what part of my argument is that it was a novation.
Is this all part of your first 5 points?
Yes, sir. And thank you for...
No, I just want to see if you're still...
That's obviously a major issue.
I don't know what the next four are.
The second point would be that assuming there was an agreement with MOL that's enforceable, that does not apply to WorldCar,
which is the owner.
You're talking
about an arbitration agreement?
Yes. Yes, sir.
If there's an arbitration agreement.
If there's an arbitration agreement, it does not apply to WorldCar, the owner of the vessel, nor to Nissan, which is the time charter.
But they're parties here.
They are parties in this case.
And they're represented by the same lawyer here.
They are.
So then what's supposed to happen to them if there's an arbitration?
We have our remedies at law.
You say you're still entitled to keep them in Baltimore.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Under the arbitration, under the ruling here.
Judge Blake's decision to blow.
Your claim would be arbitrated in Philippines.
That's right. And
that would be the claim against all three of these defendants.
That's right. And the only way that she reaches that conclusion is by saying that there was an equitable estoppel against my client. My client's claiming it can't be arbitrated. There's no agreement.
You're stopped from saying that.
And that's what she
because said. They were involved in the same tort.
But there's the distinction, Judge. That it's not the same tort. An unseaworthiness remedy relates to a condition of a vessel. My client signed an employment agreement with his employer, MOL. Perhaps one could argue there was contemplation that in that agreement he was agreeing that MOL would not act in a negligent way to him. He was not agreeing to anything with respect to the ship owner's obligation to provide him with a seaworthy vessel, with a vessel that was reasonably fit for its intended purpose. And that's the major distinction here. Plus, Mr. Aguirre was on that ship from June until August 13th when he was injured. At no time did the ship owner, which was operating that vessel, come to him and say, here, sign this arbitration agreement. Nor did the Nissan, the time charterer. This is a different situation, such as where you have maybe a saw is being sold to somebody and the act is all over in one shot and there is an estoppel against.
But do they want to arbitrate with you?
No, they don't want anything to do with me. They want me to go to the Philippines.
They sought the enforcement of the arbitration agreement.
They do, yes.
That they weren't a party to.
That's correct.
So they're willing to go to Philippines and arbitrate with you.
That's right. And that would lead to the third issue that
could I just ask, what do you do? What is your response then to what I understood to be the district court's conclusion that you allege that MOL, WorldCar, and Nissan Carrier acted in concert to bring about the accident that caused the injury?
That's the way it's characterized by defense counsel and by the court. But we have made it clear in all of our papers that there are distinct responsibilities of a ship owner that under the maritime law, different from those of the employer. One has to do with negligence, and the concept under the Supreme Court law of what is the unseaworthiness doctrine and the obligation under the seaworthiness responsibility is negligence has nothing to do with the issue of unseaworthiness. Negligence is not part of it. What is the ship and its components reasonably fit for its intended purposes? So the activities or the actions of the employer are not relevant to that. Now, as to Nissan, the time charterer, we believe that in August, they had a role in having this accident occur by directing that certain actions be done on the ship that shouldn't have been done. This was never in the contemplation of Mr. Aguirreo that a time charterer of the vessel, whom he was never disclosed to him, would have anything to do with what eventually became the catastrophic injuries he suffered. Judge, Judge King, to quickly get to the third point, It's briefed, and it's been briefed in the many, many cases that are cited by the defendants, and which I say that this court should not follow, is that with respect to arbitration clauses themselves under the Convention Act, the New York Convention Act, seamen's actions are excluded. I know that that issue has been raised in the 11th Circuit, in the 9th Circuit, the 5th Circuit, and we've not been successful on the plaintiff's side. I still think, though, that the court must look to legislative history. And each of those courts say, no, the reading of the statute is clear that the exemption for seamen's actions is not covered in Article 2 as they are in Article 1. But I think that that is just a misreading. You have to read a statute in totality. Even the title of the federal arbitration provisions say that the exemptions apply to the title. The legislative history is clear. I think that these courts have put their heads in the sand in order to prevent foreign seamen from bringing claims. Now, that may be a policy decision, but it's contrary to the statutory language, and I believe this court should look carefully at the legislative history, which clearly shows that the seamen's exemption in Article 1 applies to the Article 2 prevention.
Now, the convention incorporates the FAA.
It does, right? Absolutely.
Then you also have that other language that says, including a transaction contract or other agreements. So it sounds like where the FAA may have excluded application of contracts for the employment of seamen, by putting in this language, inclusive language, you've added back other provisions that could be added back in pursuant to contracts between the parties.
Section 208 of the same article says that the provisions of Article 1 shall apply. So there's this tension, and I think that that provision is saying, read everything in pari materia, that you should be looking at both. Your Honors, I also...
Take a couple of minutes there and tell us what your last two points are.
Yeah, well, the last point is that...
Once you get through those.
The last point is the issue about a prospective...
Last point. I thought you were on the third point before.
I'm on fourth right now.
Now fourth. What's okay. The fourth?
Under the concept of the Supreme Court in the Mitsubishi case, that there cannot be, through an agreement such as is in the June 2nd agreement, and the POE regulations, you cannot have a prospective waiver of federal statutory rights. We believe we have asserted a valid wage claim in this case under 46 U.S. Code 10313 and under the Jones Act with respect to Mr. Aguirreo. If anything, there still is our questions of fact as to whether the Jones Act would apply, and I think that there's questions of fact that need to be resolved by the district court as to whether the Wage Act would apply. And if so, the prospective waiver, and there was that case out of the 11th Circuit, which now is in question because of the Lindo decision kind of overruling or at least criticizing it, the 11th Circuit's Thomas decision, applying that concept from Mitsubishi about you can't have a prospective waiver of both the law and the forum. Yes, Judge Duncan.
And maybe you could do this on rebuttal, and I'm sorry, if you could just tell me, assuming that the arbitrators, if it went to arbitration, did not apply the Jones Act, et cetera, would you be precluded from bringing your statutory claims in federal court at that juncture?
I think you're talking about Article 5 it talks about enforcement, whereas Article 2 talks about what the defense is.
No, actually, I was talking about the post-Mitsubishi Supreme Court decisions that look to the availability of a subsequent avenue for review.
My client has been in a hospital in Baltimore for the last 3.5 years, save 2 months. Where could he ever have that opportunity? Now, I understand that maybe you have to look prospective at the time of the signing of the agreement, but I think in practice here, these things could never occur. So I have to bring in some of the facts. My client currently is in the hospital. He has pulmonary embolisms that are all related to his injury.
What's your fifth point?
The fifth point goes to that.
Pardon?
It goes to the issue of my client's injuries, and that is the maintenance and cure, the failure of the district court to even reach the issue about my client's maintenance and cure rights under the general maritime law, under Vaughan versus Atkinson, and the going back to the laws of Oleron. She said,
all the district court did was say there was no venue and dismissed in the order.
That's correct. She said any other pending motion is...
The opinion says the arbitration clause should be enforced.
Right.
But the order doesn't say that. The order says that the case is dismissed for lack of venue.
That is correct.
You make any issue about that?
I certainly have a, my client is here. The maintenance and cure that he's entitled to should be provided here. So the venue is Baltimore. So that I quarrel with. But I more particularly quarrel with the fact that she would not even address the issue that my client has under the general admiralty law, general maritime law, to have maintenance and cure provided, whether or not the other issues get arbitrated. He's got close to $1 million in expenses that the hospital is looking for him to pay. These are the responsibility of the ship owner, and the ship owner admits it has an obligation to pay maintenance cure, but they just want to ship him back to the Philippines. And my client says, don't send me back there. I'm afraid I'm going to die. My medical care should be here with my doctors. That the law of maintenance and cure permits a seaman to choose his own doctor, as long as it's within reason. He doesn't know who they are, and there's no obligation. There is no proof that anybody in the Philippines even would take him on as a patient. So therefore, I strongly quarrel with what the judge did in dismissing this case and saying there's no jurisdiction.
Let's see what Mr. Whitman's got to say. We gave you a little bit of extra time there. Mr. Whitman?
May it please the court. I'm Tony Whitman with Carla Murphy. We represent MOL Ship Management and World Car Carriers and Nissan Motor Car Carriers. They are the defendant appellees in this case. Before I proceed, I should make it clear that our clients regret exceedingly the tragic accident to Mr. Agarayo. There's no doubt about that.
No question he's hurt terribly.
No question he's hurt terribly. No question, Your Honor. My clients have paid over $900,000 in medical care for Mr. Agarayo during the period of time from the accident when he was medevaced off the ship to shock trauma in Baltimore and then moved from shock trauma to an associated hospital, the Kernan Rehabilitation Hospital. In December, the doctors at Kernan met with Mr. Agarayo and his brother who was in town and said, now is the time. You are ready to go back to the Philippines and begin a new life. Not necessarily a good life, but begin a new life.
Even if the specific claims of the Jones Act or the Seamen's Act couldn't be brought pursuant to arbitration, would you contend that because the arbitration clause has a provision for personal injury or death, hopefully not, of course, to happen in this case, or unpaid wages, that the rights then are still protected under the provisions of the arbitration clause?
Your Honor, I think that when you get to the fundamental concern of the prospective waiver clause, the prospective waiver policy in footnote 19 of Mitsubishi, which is really, I think, where this all goes. Mitsubishi is also full of language that says we should defer to the arbitrators. The arbitrators need to first rule. It would be premature to consider. In fact, I think footnote 19 itself says it would be premature to consider what will happen in the arbitration and therefore what would come back, if you will, after the arbitration.
I thought it was a very good question, but I'm not hearing a response.
Well, and if I may, if the arbitrators consider the tort claims, then in my view, in our view, that would validate the fundamental concerns of American law in the same way that Weimar and Mitsubishi have discussed that in the same way that the Lloyds cases have discussed that, that it is not word-for-word application of the United States statute that is required. It is rather vindication of United States principles of fundamental fairness.
And you said if. Why do you say if as opposed to that this will occur during arbitration?
Oh, I believe it will. I believe that the arbitrator will consider the tort claims. I think that there are claims, although I think Mr. Hoffman would say what's really at stake is only the issue of the compensation. I think Mr. Agarreo will very likely press the argument that his sick pay may have not been paid to him. He may press an argument that the medical expenses should have been paid for under his agreement. Those are issues that are out there for him to press in the arbitration. They need not be pressed in this court, and it is our position they should not be pressed in this court.
Will the district court still have the ability, if there's any stage to compel arbitration, to enforce the award? Because that seems to be what's still left open, is whether or not there would be an opportunity for subsequent review for the enforcement award at the district court level.
Your Honor, I think this is the same situation that there was in Weimar, again, which was carriage of goods by sea act statute as opposed to Jones Act or Seaman's Wage Act. But in Weimar, the Supreme Court said it should go to arbitration and that after the arbitration, there will be the opportunity. And I believe, we believe, under the Convention Act, 206 and 207, I believe, are the two provisions, it is entirely possible for Mr. Agarreo to come back to court here within 3 years, I believe.
Come back to the same court in Baltimore.
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you have to initiate a new lawsuit? That would be a new lawsuit.
Yes, sir.
And we have had a lot of cases around here, these arbitration cases, where we, where the district courts find the arbitration clause applicable and direct enforcement of the clause and then hold the case in abeyance or stay the case, proceedings in the case, pending the arbitration. And then there's no question it can come back.
That's right.
And if there's any, what they've called it, award enforcement stage. But here, no arbitration was even ordered.
That's correct.
All the judge said, it ought to be enforced, but the order just dismisses.
The order is a dismissal of it's a dismissal for improper venue. Yes.
And that's what that jumped out at me here. And are your clients, is it clear in this record that your clients, all three of them, are willing to arbitrate this matter in the Philippines?
I don't know that the record addresses that.
Well, I'm asking it right now. Well, I want to know this record.
And one thing,
and that's the reason I'm asking right. That because two of them, they claim they didn't sign any arbitration agreement, but that's the ones that they've held that the plaintiff is equitably estopped, right?
That's right.
And if he's equitably estopped, they ought to be willing to arbitrate.
I believe that's correct. Yes, Your Honor.
So and I like so they're willing to go to arbitration proceedings pursuant to the agreement that you say we have here and the district court says we have here in the Philippines over these claims.
They are willing to appear in those arbitration proceedings.
They're willing to arbitrate these claims in the Philippines.
Well, Your Honor, in the Philippines, under Philippine law.
Well, not going to jargon. I understand it's not the Jones Act.
Yes, sir.
But it's substantively the same claims.
Yes.
Is that the right language? That may not be the exact same right language. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Whether Nissan or WorldCar could be liable for those claims under Philippine law will be an issue in the arbitration.
But I think if
Your Honor is asking, will they appear? Yes.
Will they have the claims arbitrated?
Yes, Your Honor.
Response.
They may not like what the arbitrator says.
They may not like.
They may like what the arbitrator says.
And there is something that I'd like to address, Your Honor, which is has not been raised by Mr. Hoffman.
But well, I'm sure that's true. But I want to get satisfied on that point.
This relates to the same
World
part.
Car and Nissan are willing to arbitrate in the Philippines.
And this relates to that same point. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is that the POEA agreement itself would make his claim time barred at this point because it wasn't brought within 3 years after the claim, after the accident. My clients are willing to agree and have agreed. I have not conveyed this to Mr. Hoffman, but they have agreed for the record that they will not raise that time bar defense for any arbitration which is brought in the Philippines within 6 months after the ruling of this court is final, so as to dispense with any concern that the time bar would unfairly prejudice Mr. Aguirreo and would mean that he couldn't go to arbitration over there.
You say there's a 3 years, so what, there's no tolling provision or anything when he brings a lawsuit?
I don't know, Your Honor, and if there is a tolling provision under Philippine law, obviously that would govern.
That would take care of it?
Yes, sir.
He brought a lawsuit here.
Yes, that may very well, but I specifically raised this because I had a concern that the court might have a concern.
Okay. And in which case, it could come back to Baltimore.
Yes, sir.
It'd be
under the Convention Act.
And under the, what do you call that, second stage?
Yes, it's the award enforcement stage. Which would permit Mr. Aguirreo to challenge the award and to say that it violates public policy. Yes. Yes. And specifically, Judge King, to your point that Judge Blake did not retain jurisdiction in the Weimar case, which is also known as Sky Reefer, that was the name of the ship. In the Weimar or Sky Reefer case, the district court did not retain jurisdiction, and that did not prevent the Supreme Court from concluding that the parties needed to go to Japan to arbitrate. And after the arbitration was over, the parties could come back as necessary under the Convention Act to have a resolution of whether there were still issues under U.S. policy.
Why wouldn't the better procedure on that last part be that the district court should reinstate the proceedings and stay them pending the arbitration?
Your Honor, that I believe would be a possibility, but I don't think it's necessary. It's not necessary under the Arbitration Act or the Convention Act for us to have moved to compel arbitration under this court's jurisprudence on arbitration and venue. Our motion was a motion to dismiss for improper venue. And that was what Judge Blake did. Judge Blake surely could have instead retained jurisdiction and ordered arbitration, but that is not what she did.
Well, she said arbitration specifically said that because the arbitration clause at issue qualifies under the convention, it must be enforced.
Yes, Your Honor. It's not in so many words an order to arbitrate, as you noted, the order itself.
But then it doesn't, the order doesn't say it.
That's correct.
It's enforced. But she says it should be, it must be enforced.
Yes, she does. And we don't dispute that.
And you would not object to such a provision in an order?
Your Honor, I think
making it plain what I think we all think, at least implicit.
I think the court has, this court has the power to direct that be entered. I
suppose, understand that you think it's unnecessary.
And I don't think that it would be beyond the power of this court to do. But would I object is a sort of a vague term.
Would you agree to it? That's not an objection. That's not vague.
And
I don't expect you to, but I'm asking you.
Your Honor, if we get an order from this court that says that, it would not be a surprise. But I don't know until I see the opinion and order of this court whether we would object to it.
Okay. Well, you can understand our concern.
I do understand your concern.
We necessarily have some sympathy for the situation that this man finds himself in. And we wouldn't want him to lose any rights that are provided to him under the law of the United States, under the Jones Act, for example. But if those rights can be vindicated under the arbitration clause that you say applies, and Judge Blake says applies, in the proceedings in the Philippines, all well and good. But we wouldn't want him to lose any right to contest whether that was done properly.
I think we're on the same page, right?
And also not add an unnecessary procedure if it can be dealt with in an order. In other words, you mentioned earlier that there would have to be a totally new lawsuit, but why not react to having a provision here so that if there needed to be an enforcement stage issue or either compelling something within the order, that could be taken care of here?
That would make sense, Your Honor. I'm not sure that the extra effort of filing a new lawsuit is that significant or substantial. It's certainly provided for under the Convention Act. But if, in fact, Judge Blake had retained jurisdiction, that's where we would be. If this court were to order that Judge Blake, essentially, without altering her memorandum, because the memorandum
The question I think we're asking wouldn't change any of the rulings on the legal points. It might amend the disposition.
Exactly. It would amend the order.
Yes.
But not her opinion, if you will.
That's right.
Yes. There were a couple of points raised by Mr. Hoffman specifically that I thought I should address, if I may. One is the point about Section 28.5 in the CBA, in the Collective Bargaining Agreement. And we certainly agree that the June 2 agreement and the June 3 agreement and the Collective Bargaining Agreement all need to be read together in a way that makes sense of all of them. Mr. Hoffman said that 28.5 provides for an action at law. Those were the words he used. But it's important to look at what 28.5 actually says. 28.5 says essentially that
the ship doesn't prejudice any action at law that may be otherwise available. Or words to that effect.
May I? Just want to make sure I get it right, Your Honor. Any payment affected under 28.1 to 28.4 above, those are disability payments, shall be without prejudice to any claim for compensation made in law. So there's no, the word action does not appear there, which is my point. It does not create a right to a lawsuit. In fact, there are claims that are legal claims that can be made in the arbitration, and I have expressed earlier that I expect they will be made in the arbitration. I expect Mr. Aguirre will argue that his medical care should have been paid for all along and may argue that his sick pay hasn't been paid properly and so forth. And that if he recovers on those, then the CBA provides for certain credit, if you will, to the ship owner. But the CBA does not create a right for Mr. Aguirre to go to court to create an action for a claim at law. And that's the difference that we have with Mr. Hoffman on that point. Also, if I may, and that what I read from was at page 205 of the appendix. Also, if I may, Mr. Hoffman talked about the duty of seaworthiness. And I think it's important to recognize at page 185 of the appendix, and again, the POEA terms as reproduced in the appendix are difficult to read, and nevertheless, at section 1 of the standard terms and conditions, the POEA terms, section 1, duties of the employer, that is to say MOL ship management, A3, provide a seaworthy vessel for the seafarer and take all reasonable precautions to prevent accident and injury to the crew, and so forth. So there is specifically a duty of seaworthiness created in the employment contract under Philippine law there is a duty of seaworthiness owed by the employer, MOL, to Mr. Agarayo. Mr. Hoffman points out that there is a general maritime law principle for the duty to provide a seaworthy vessel on the part of the owner. That's correct here. But we also think that Judge Blake's analysis of equitable estoppel was correct. We think that, in fact, the claims, as shown by the complaint, are so bound up together, there is no way that Nissan Motor Car Carriers could have acted aboard that vessel other than through MOL ship management personnel, because they're the only people who are on the ship. There's no way that if the equipment is unseaworthy, the equipment may belong to WorldCar, but the operator of the equipment was an MOL employee. And so if the MOL employee sat in that deck lifting machine, which is what this was, if you think of it as a truck with a hydraulic lift that will lift and raise very large ceiling panels about half the size of the ceiling in this room, raise and lower them to adjust them within the ship. The operator is an MOL ship management employee. If he's negligent, if he doesn't look back behind and doesn't see Mr. Agarayo, that's negligence. But if at the same time there wasn't a proper mirror to permit him to see backwards, which I believe is one of Mr. Hoffman's allegations, then that's unseaworthiness. And how do you untangle those sorts of intertwined actions, intertwined claims? So for equitable estoppel, we think that is, we think Judge Blake was right on. We also think that principles of agency exist here, since the ship management contract specifically says that MOL ship management serves as agent for WorldCar, and WorldCar is 100% owned by Nissan Motor Car Carriers, so the cases in this court would sustain an agency relationship that would bind Mr. Agarayo to arbitrate against WorldCar and Nissan as well. Those were the points that specifically Mr. Hoffman raised that I wanted to address.
Okay, if you need a couple more minutes, I'll give you equal time with Mr. Hoffman. Well, I did that before.
Thank you, Your Honor. We really haven't addressed the overall policy issues here. And I think that's important. When you look at Mitsubishi, when you look at Weimar, when you look at Shirk, the policy that statutory claims can be arbitrated, the policy that under Article 2 of the Convention, the inquiry is limited. There is a Fourth Circuit case, IATD Associates versus Podar Brothers, which is actually cited in the Lindo opinion, although not referred to in our briefs on either side, which talks about the limited inquiry under Article 2 and the fact that under Article 2, the issue of whether a clause should be considered null and void needs to be considered in the context of context of rules that can be universally applied on an international scale. That's the same analysis that Lindo and others bring to the Article 2 stage, that you can't bring in a parochial concept at the Article 2 stage of the convention, the arbitration enforcement stage, and say, we'll consider this null and void because we have a statute out there that says something that would result in a different end. We can't say under the Fourth Circuit case and under the other cases, we shouldn't say that the American Seamen's Wage Act is a sufficient cause to overturn the arbitration clause, because surely the American Seamen's Wage Act is not uniformly enforceable on an international scale. So those policy issues, Your Honor, I think need to also be considered, but I appreciate the court's time, and if you have any other further questions, I'd be happy to respond.
Thank you very much, Mr. Whitman.
Thank you. Thank you, Judge King.
Mr. Hoffman?
Yes, sir.
In quick response to several of the points that Mr. Whitman made, Judge Blake specifically rejected the agency concept and held solely that the with respect to Nissan and World Car, that the equitable estoppel issue was the reason why she found that they were covered. And that, if you look at footnote 7, she says, because the of her opinion, she says, because the doctrine of estoppel applies here and not common law agency principles, Razzo is unpersuasive. And what Judge Blake was referring to was the Third Circuit affirmance of the District of New Jersey's decision in Razzo, in which we have the exact same situation as we have here. We have the court recognizing that the ship owner has separate obligations from the employer. In that case, you had Royal Caribbean as the employer, and you had a separate corporation that was the ship owner, and the court found that the duties under the general maritime law of providing a seaworthy vessel were non-delegable, as the Supreme Court has taught us since the steamship Yaka and before. So whether or not an MOL employee was operating this deck lifter, and we don't know what World Car, because there's no discovery, we don't know what World Car employees were on this vessel, we don't know which Nissan employees were on the vessel. I can tell you my client has said that there were Nissan employees at least directing what was going on. But whether or not the owner, World Car, chose to just delegate to MOL certain activities does not abrogate its obligation, its non-delegable duty to provide a seaworthy vessel. Council cannot get past that. Whether or not the POE regulations might delegate to MOL also the obligation to provide a seaworthy vessel is totally irrelevant to what were World Car's obligation, what was Nissan as the time charterer directing where this boat went to. Council did not reach or discuss, and I wanted to just go back to the decision by Judge Blake to not even address the issue of maintenance and cure. Here we have a situation, and that's why the general maritime law protects seamen. What is it that Mr. Whitman and his clients wished to do? They wished to take Mr. Agarayo out of the hospital in Baltimore and ship him back. Now, he lives in a small
village. Wouldn't have to go back over in order to arbitrate.
How else would he do it,
Joe? Well, they could take his deposition, or you could take his deposition, and it could be submitted in the arbitration proceedings, I would think. If he's not able to be transported from the United States to the Philippines, I would think that there'd be an arbitration proceeding conducted that way.
Not to my knowledge is any of
that. I don't know either, but yeah. I would just think there could be.
This raises some of the issues to fundamental fairness of this applying this here.
And if it's not conducted properly, they agree that you're going to be able to come back.
Well, it's nice that he says today, yes, we now agree. There's nothing in the record that shows that. There's nothing in the record that shows that these corporate defendants, one from Liberia and one from Japan, is even subject to jurisdiction in the Philippines. I mean, these comments that were made that, oh, yes, we would subject ourselves, there's nothing in the record that would even suggest that.
We've got a record here today.
Well, I understand, but I don't know that that should really change this situation here, where we did not have these parties who had the opportunity to sign an arbitration agreement with Mr. Agarayo for the 3 months he was on the vessel. They chose not to. And as the Supreme Court has taught, I'll finish my sentence, as the Supreme Court has taught, the arbitration is not a situation where you are dictated to. It is an agreement among parties. Mr. Aguirreo never agreed to arbitrate with either of those two defendants, nor did he agree to arbitrate an unseaworthiness claim or a claim under the general maritime law for the time charterer's faults. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hoffman. We appreciate counsel's assistance in this case. We'll go to come down.